This is Cave Scott Allen of OTCode.com.
This is Kevin Dente.
This is John Galloway.
This is Scott Kuhn from LazyCoder.com.
Hello, welcome to another episode of Herding Code. This episode is being recorded on January 11th, 2012. And tonight we are talking to Derek Bailey. Derek is a consultant and the founder of WatchMeCode.net, where he sells JavaScript-themed screencasts. So welcome, Derek. Thanks for coming
on. Hi there. Thanks for having me on.
And today we're going to be talking about Backbone.js, which is a hot new JavaScript framework. And Derek has a lot of expertise in this, so we thought we'd have him on and he can tell us what's what with it. So start at the beginning. Why don't you let people know what exactly Backbone is for those who don't know?
Well, the first thing is probably what it's not, and it's not an MVC framework in JavaScript. That's one of the big names and acronyms that's being tossed around these days, and everything gets lumped into it, even when it's really not appropriate. But I guess it's understandable since, you know, Ruby on Rails and ASP.NET MVC and all of these other back-end web frameworks are MVC style. People expect to see the same kinds of patterns in the browser. And Backbone does fit into that family of architectures and ideas, but it's not strictly model view controller. It takes different ideas from various flavors. There's a little bit of MVVM, a little bit of MVP, and a little bit of MVC, and probably a few other things that it just picked and chose and decided to pull in order to create the framework that is Backbone. So really, what it comes down to, though, is Backbone is a way to help structure and organize your code, separating various responsibilities into easily recognizable pieces so that we can build highly interactive applications, whether it's a single-page application, which is becoming a pretty big popular term these days, or even just using Backbone to help organize your jQuery code and existing JavaScript. It's a very flexible library, really, which is another little point to keep in mind. Jeremy Ashkenas, the guy that built Backbone, said, I don't know, maybe a month or two ago, that Backbone is 100% library and not framework. And the distinction that they made in that conversation on Twitter was a framework calls your code, you call a library's code. So other tools and other frameworks in the MVC world in JavaScript really are frameworks in that sense. But Backbone is more like jQuery or some of the other libraries that you happen to use and call out to whenever you want to do something useful that it provides.
So what are kind of the pieces of Backbone? Like what are the parts of this library that you're interacting with?
There are a handful of different pieces that it comes with. There's models and collections, which anybody that's done any kind of development probably is familiar with the concepts of those. There's views, which are not the same thing as views that you would see in an MVC application. And then there are routers, which would be familiar from ASP.NET MVC or Rails or any of the other MVC frameworks. And then there's a few helper pieces in the back. There's backbone.sync, which is where all of the server-side synchronization code goes. It uses jQuery or Zepto.js, either of those by default, to communicate with your server using a JSON request back and forth. There's also backbone.events, which provides a publish-subscribe mechanism inside basically all of the other pieces of Backbone. And you can also use it yourself to augment your own objects with publish-subscribe in order to create some really cool functionality on your own. And then there's the Backbone history object, which sits behind the routers. So when most people look at routers in Backbone, the router looks like it's managing your document fragments, your hash fragments in your browser's URL in order to create your single page applications and change the content of the screen whenever you click a link or use a bookmark to get somewhere. But in reality, that router is actually handing most of the work off to the Backbone history object. And the reason for doing that is that you can have multiple routers inside a single application. So you can really get routers along with everything else in your application whittled down to a single set of responsibilities and multiple routers to represent different areas of your application based on the resources that you're looking at or however you want to divide that up.
So for people who aren't familiar with the term single-page application, can you just give a quick definition of what that means?
Yeah, the easiest example that most people will understand is Gmail. When you go to log into your Gmail account, you get this nice little URL. It's got some junk in it. And at the very end of that, you'll see hash inbox. And when you click on an email that's in your inbox, that hash at the end of the URL will change to hash inbox slash some gibberish for the ID of the email. And that right there is evidence that Google is creating a single page application. They have a very large infrastructure in place to allow Gmail to work for you to navigate between your different labels, to view messages, to switch to the contact mode or the task list, or to do all of these different things that Gmail does. And they do it all without making calls back to the server every time you want to make a change in what's happening on the screen. So you click on that email in your inbox, you don't get that screen goes entirely blank and then reloads from the server. All it does is refresh the content for the main area of the screen in order to show you the detail for that email. So that's really the best way to look at a single page application is the ability for your web page to refresh individual pieces of your browser window without having to do a complete refresh and reload from the server.
So is Backbone useful for people who aren't writing full-fledged single-page applications, or is it really targeted at that?
I use it for almost everything that I do these days, and most of what I do is not single-page applications. The very first application that I wrote with Backbone was a simple medication list for patients. You would go to the screen, it would show you any existing medications that you had, and it would allow you to enter the information for any new medications or delete an existing one or edit an existing one. I had originally written that page entirely in jQuery, and it was probably, I think, 250, 275 lines of code, but it was a giant mess. It was, you know, 5 or 6 levels deep of nested jQuery callbacks all over the place, and there were very strange bugs in it that if you didn't do certain things in certain orders, you would end up with visual artifact and data that was correct, but looked funny on the screen because I was showing IDs instead of the human readable values. And so when I got introduced to Backbone on this project, I rewrote that page inside of Backbone, basically converted the existing jQuery into the Backbone structures. And it probably added 10 or 20 lines of code, tell you the truth, but it cleaned up everything in the process. I was able to more easily see all of the different pieces that were interacting with each other, and I was able to get the functionality I needed in place a lot easier and a lot faster the second time around. And I reduced the number of bugs overall because the code was easier to follow, easier to work with, and easier to add new bits and new features to it as I was going along. So I would say the majority of the work I've done with Backbone is not single-page applications, but that does seem to be a very popular reason to use Backbone. Really, though, Backbone can be as much or as little as you want it to be in your application. And that's one of the reasons that I love it so much. It's a very, very flexible set of tools. It's not like some of the other MVC frameworks out there where you have to go all or nothing. It really is pick and choose the pieces that you want to use when you want to use them.
So that actually was my question. I was going to say, as part of that rewrite, is it the kind of framework where you have to buy into it, you know, and say, okay, I'm going to restructure and refactor the whole thing? Or can you just drop, I mean, very different in focus, but with jQuery, you don't have to rewrite your application for it to use jQuery. You can do a little jQuery one-liner and it'll improve things. Is it the kind of thing where, I mean, you could do some of that, but to really get anywhere, you really start needing to use models and you know, doing some amount of refactoring to get some use out of it?
I think it follows in that same philosophy as what you mentioned with jQuery. There are a lot of great things that you can do by combining all of the pieces of Backbone, but you don't have to bring all of them along. I mean, yeah, you have to bring the entire JavaScript file along, but it's a pretty small file, and you don't have to use all of the pieces. If you just want a better way to collect data instead of storing everything in the DOM directly or in your own custom JavaScript objects. If you're looking for something that can give you get and set methods and have events when data changes, then start using a model. It's really simple to do that. All you need to do is say new backbone.model and you're up and running. Same thing with views. Views and backbone, like I said earlier, really don't translate directly to what most web developers think of as a view. I did a blog post recently where I talked about how I don't think Backbone is an MVC framework. And in one of the points that I made, I mentioned how I really see it as more of a Model View Presenter framework. And that comes from the work that I did for 5 or 6 years in both Windows and web development, where it's a vertical approach to pushing data up and down versus a circular approach like Model View Controller tends to be. And what I mean there is your models tend to sit at the very bottom with a presenter in the middle that coordinates data in and out of the models, and then a view on top of the presenter that, you know, displays things to the users and the user interacts with. Well, the backbone view really is more of a presenter in my mind. It sits in that middle layer, coordinating things with the backend model and the frontend view, which is the HTML and DOM in this case. Now, back to your question, though, the view is really small, really simple, and really easy to work with on its own. At its very core, the view provides an easy way to organize your jQuery code. So if you've got 2 or 3 nested functions and callbacks in jQuery code, and you want to organize that a little bit better, drop a backbone view in there and use backbone's declarative events on the view in order to make your jQuery code a little bit cleaner and easier to work with. There's a lot of opportunity for bringing the individual pieces of backbone into your application without having to do a complete rewrite or a restructuring in order to get everything in place.
So if you were to compare backbone versus some of the other, I say MVC frameworks, but as you point out, not all of these are MVC frameworks. Like, what are the other libraries that do sort of like what Backbone does, and how do they compare? How are they different?
Yeah, there's a lot of them out there. They seem to be popping out of the woodwork left and right these days. Some of the more popular ones include Sprout Core, Batman.js, Ember.js, JavaScript MVC, Agility.js, and I'm sure there's a handful or 20 that I'm completely forgetting at the moment. The major difference, there's also Knockout.js. That's the big one that people always want to hear Backbone compared to. The major difference between Backbone and some of these others is flexibility and how much it's going to hold your hand versus not. And things like Sprout Core and JavaScript MVC, they tend to be fairly heavy-handed, true frameworks in that they say, this is how you're going to structure your application. This is how you're going to facilitate this functionality. And of course, there's flexibility within that. There's always more than one way to build the same application, but there is a certain structure that you should put in place in order to get a JavaScript MVC or a Sprout Core application up and running. And Sprout Core really tends to be the big heavy-handed one where it's got the most moving parts and the most code and configuration to get up and running. Backbone, on the other hand, as I've been saying, is very flexible and doesn't require you to use everything or to have a specific structure in your code. There's a handful of really smart guys doing some great work in Backbone, and I pay attention to as many of them as I can on their blogs and Twitter and everything else. And we all have very different opinions about how to build a Backbone application, but it's great to be able to see the different opinions and learn from the different ideas and improve my own work based upon what they're doing. So there's another framework called Spine.js, which I read an interview with the author of Spine. I can't remember his name at the moment, but he talked about how some of the inspiration for Spine.js came directly from reading the source code and looking at Backbone. And he liked what he saw, but he didn't agree with all of the opinions and all of the structure in Backbone, and he wanted to simplify things. He thought he could get the same functionality in a much smaller framework or library, however you want to look at it. And, you know, to to the extent that he tried to reduce size and reduce the number of constructs in the framework, he succeeded. There's no collection in Spine, for example. There's just the Spine model, and you can use it as a single model or a collection. There's been a lot of divergence in how Spine has progressed compared to Backbone since they were first created, and Spine has gone heavily into CoffeeScript these days, whereas Backbone developers tend to be more in JavaScript, although there's still a lot of people doing Backbone with CoffeeScript. So Knockout.js, that's the one that everybody always asks, why should I use Backbone or Knockout? Which one of these two is going to be better, or, you know, whatever variation of that question. And it's kind of an unfortunate question, honestly. Backbone and Knockout really solve different problems. And there's a very small space where they overlap, which has in the past made them incompatible. But with some recent versions and releases of Knockout, there's actually a lot of different ways that they can be used together now, including a project called Knockback.js, which brings Backbone and Knockout directly together. But Knockout's core focus is data binding and small updates to your HTML as data changes. It provides a model structure and what it calls observables, I think, in order to listen to changes in the data and update your HTML and DOM in very small increments when those changes happen, and then to take interactions from the user and cause changes in the data, which will again make changes in the UI. And it does all of this through a very elaborate data binding mechanism. If you've ever done any development with WPF or XAML in Silverlight, you're very likely going to have used data binding inside of the XAML technologies. And Knockout's data bind was a direct reflection of that for the HTML world. Knockout was created by Steve Sanderson, I think is his name, and he works for Microsoft on the ASP.NET team or one of the other software and development related teams.
Yeah, he is on the ASP.NET team.
Right. So Steve took the ideas of the data binding capabilities out of XAML and brought it into the web with Knockout. And it's a really, really, really slick framework. You can do some beautiful and amazing stuff in next to no code, but you sacrifice writing code for writing a lot of configuration. Now, me personally, I don't like to do a lot of configuration like that, although I'm willing to live with some. But the major difference between Knockout and Backbone is that Backbone focuses more on the structure of your JavaScript code, whereas Knockout focuses more on the data binding capabilities to update your HTML when data changes. And in the past, as I said, they didn't work together. So there was always this dichotomy of Backbone versus Knockout, and it was really unfortunate. But with the recent releases of Knockout, there's that Knockback project, which allows you to take Backbone's structure and use Backbone's models to directly data bind with Knockout into your UI and have all of the fancy whiz-bang data binding capabilities that Knockout provides on top of a Backbone application. Along those lines, there's another project, actually a plugin to Backbone that I wrote called Backbone Model Binding, which was heavily inspired by what I saw in Knockout. And I started bringing some of the data bind capabilities from Knockout over into Backbone, using Backbone directly and then my own code on top of that. Rather than marrying Knockout and Backbone together, I wrote my own version of a data bind capability in order to make it easier to eliminate some of the repetitive tasks of getting data out of a form into a model and then getting changes to my models updated into the UI. So there are definitely options for making that portion of your applications easier. It just depends on which of those routes you want to go. And there's also some other plugins that'll do the same thing too.
So earlier you talked about, you know, that there is a learning curve to Backbone, and part of it is that it kind of gives you a lot of tools and you kind of choose how to assemble them. I kind of mentally would equate this a little bit to, you know, last week we were talking to Phil Hack and Paul Betts about Git, and there's kind of a similar, so I've heard people say, you know, you can write a source control system on top of Git, you know, but there's a lot of different flows and structure you can put to it. So you said that you've written some things and there are things written to, you know, apply like data binding and that kind of thing. Are there some kind of templates or boilerplates? As I was about to ask this, Elijah Manor asked over Twitter about Backbone.js boilerplate from Boku. Are there others or how do those work?
Yeah. As you mentioned, there's that boilerplate project from Boku, and there's at least one other boilerplate that I've heard of recently on the Backbone mailing list, but I can't remember who released it recently. That boilerplate from Boku is a great way to get up and running and get started with Backbone if you're not familiar with it, or if you're looking for some best practices or different ideas on how to structure your code. I learned quite a bit from it, quite honestly. For as much as I've been doing Backbone, there's just different ideas and different opinions out there on how to do Backbone, and there's a lot of great information in there. You know, I don't agree with all of the opinions in there, but there are certainly some things that I'm going to take from it and bring back into my own code, such as the use of modules and the use of compiling JST JavaScript templates on the server in order to have pre-compiled and cached JavaScript templates at runtime in order to speed things up on the front end. Great stuff in there, and I would recommend looking at that for sure. There's another project that I've been working on, which I wouldn't quite call a boilerplate, but it's kind of along those same lines. I built a plugin called Backbone Marionette, and the idea behind that was to take some of the patterns that I've been using in my own projects and extract them into a structure to put Backbone within for larger applications. So I've got one particular project for a client that has, at the moment, three different major areas of the application. And I was writing a lot of infrastructure code in order to be able to switch between these three areas. Imagine Gmail's inbox versus task list versus contact list. Those are three major areas all within the same application. So the code that I wrote in order to get my application to easily switch back and forth kind of became familiar and became more and more stable to the point where I was able to extract it into this Backbone Marionette framework. And so Marionette, while it isn't really a boilerplate, allowed me to write a sample application that kind of is a boilerplate. So I wrote this application called BB Clone Mail, Backbone Clone Mail, basically a clone of a Gmail-like interface built on top of Backbone. It's hosted on GitHub, and you can see it running live at bbclonemail.heroku.com. And the purpose of that was to show what I consider best practices for writing a larger single-page application in Backbone. Now, I wouldn't use all of these pieces in a small application. I might, you know, use some of the region managers just to get information onto the screen really quickly so I don't have to write that code again. But I probably wouldn't take the whole structure of Marionette and bring it into a really small application. So it might not be a boilerplate, but it's still going to help people see what you can do and some of the options for getting a bigger application up and running with Backbone.
So you talked about Backbone.modelbinding and Backbone.marionette, two of your plugins that you've written, but
yep.
I also noticed you had a Backbone.memento. What's that? Right.
So one of the side effects of my Backbone model binding plugin is that as soon as you make a change to a form element, it'll update your model. And if you have a cancel button on your form somewhere, you need to be able to revert the changes that were already stuffed into your model. And I looked in the Backbone source itself, and there's hints and ideas around doing that, but nothing really formal for saying, hey, I've got a bunch of changes that I want to toss out after they've already been applied. And so Backbone Memento came out of that need. I needed a way to say, here's my model state that I want to save, and here's a bunch of changes that I'm making to that model. Oh, wait, the user is hitting cancel, so let's roll everything back to that saved state. And so I implemented a very basic memento pattern and called it Backbone Memento, you know, the most original name ever. But it provides the ability to store and restore your model state at any given time. So you can spin up a model, set a couple of attributes, store that, set a couple more attributes, store that state, set a couple more, and on and on and on and on, storing and changing and storing and changing, and then roll all of that back as far back as you want to go. So it provides basically undo redo capabilities. And there's an open ticket right now, some discussion with a guy who's adding in the redo capabilities right now. It's probably going to be released maybe within the next week, might even be before this is actually a live episode. So it's a small plugin. Again, it's targeted at a very specific scenario, but it seems to be a common scenario and it's got quite a bit of usage.
So just to go back for a second to the discussion we were having about all these competing, quote unquote, competing frameworks, Backbone. Mm-hmm. It seems like Backbone is really gaining a lot of mindshare out there. Why do you think it's so hot? Why do you think that one has risen to the top more than some of these other competing frameworks?
And, you know, that's a good question because Backbone certainly wasn't the first kid on the block. I think if I were to take a complete stab in the dark guess, it was timing and opinions and a few big names getting behind it pretty quickly. I mean, it was written by Jeremy Ashkenas for the Document Cloud project originally. Jeremy, of course, is the guy that created CoffeeScript and _JS and the Jamit asset packaging library and a host of other amazing tools. The guy is just quite obviously brilliant. So with Jeremy's name behind it, and him having built it to play well with Rails out of the box, it started getting a lot of attention in the Rails world. And I think from there, it just kind of exploded and the rest of the internet community kind of latched onto it. That's how I came across it. It was actually Joey Benninghove, who I was working on a contract with, that introduced me to Backbone about 6 months ago. He had heard of it from several places. I had never heard of that one specifically, but I was aware of some of the MVC frameworks at the time. And so he grabbed it, started playing with it, showed it to me, and I fell in love with it almost immediately and started blogging about it and working with it on almost a daily basis. So I really couldn't say why it became so popular so quickly, but there's certainly a lot of evidence to say that it did. It's certainly one of the more popular ones out there these days. And maybe one of the reasons is because of its flexibility, because you can use it in so many different ways, and because it's not going to prescribe the Backbone way to get things done.
Yeah, it's funny. In my previous job, I was doing some stuff with Knockout. And then on my current project, which is my own project, I've been using Backbone. And at first, you know, my first reaction was sort of like, well, there's so much stuff that it doesn't do. You know, there's so much stuff that it kind of leaves to you to figure out.
Yeah.
But the more I work with it, the more that what seemed like a weakness sort of became a strength. Like it doesn't. I also don't feel like you're fighting the framework to do something that they didn't think of. You know what I mean?
Right. Right. And the few times where I think, oh man, I really wish, it's usually a couple of lines of code that I can extract into a function or write a plugin for. I mean, I've got four plugins up there now. So it's pretty easy to build stuff on top of, or three or whatever it is. It's pretty easy to build stuff on top of Backbone, extract your common patterns, toss it out there on GitHub, and get people to use it and contribute it to it.
So that's, the whole plugin system obviously was one of the reasons why jQuery got huge, you know, really easy to jump in and just wrap up something into a plugin. Mm-hmm. I notice pretty much any code you read with Backbone starts with, you know, backbone.something.extend, backbone.model.extend, and that's just following the kind of, I mean, I'm reading into it, but it seems like it's just the basic, like, prototypical inheritance kind of thing. Is that the idea? I mean, can you explain how the plugin thing works and if it's similar to the backbone.star.extend?
Yeah, it's the extend method. There's a little bit of history behind that. Well, this is something I should have said probably closer to the beginning. The only true requirement for Backbone, other than the Backbone JavaScript file itself, is _JS. That's another library that Jeremy Ashkenas wrote. And if you don't have _JS in your app, Backbone won't work at all. It really is a prerequisite, and you have to have it in place. So the extend method comes out of underscore directly. And the extend method is actually a pretty common function in utility libraries out there. What it does is basically copy and paste methods and attributes from one object onto another. And so Jeremy uses underscores extend in some pretty creative ways to facilitate prototypal inheritance inside of Backbone's object. So when you say backbone.model.extend, you're essentially defining a new model with your own custom behaviors on it. But then you can use that same model and extend from it. So if I say foo model equals backbone.model.extend and I add some functionality, well, after that, I can say foo model.extend and add yet more functionality. So it's your inheritance chain and your prototypal inheritance at that, all wrapped up into this nice, neat little extend function that makes it look sort of like a class definition. Although there's a little bit of danger in thinking of it as a class definition because it really is a JavaScript object literal. And so all of your values in an object literal get evaluated at the time that they are defined in your code, which means you can run into some fun little jQuery bugs if you accidentally use a jQuery selector as a value and that code is defined before the DOM is ready. But as far as building plugins go, it's really easy to extend the existing functionality in Backbone by creating your own version of an object. So my Marionette plugin has a collection view and an item view, for example. I've taken the boilerplate code for rendering an individual item and rendering a collection as a list of items and encapsulated that into these two objects that need very little code. The typical Backbone view implementation for me when I render a collection and a list of items in that collection is probably 5 to 10 lines of code for both the collection and the item view. With my Marionette plugin, I've encapsulated that boilerplate code, so it's essentially 3 lines of configuration and you're done. You've got the collection view where you specify the type of item view that you want to deal with, and by default it'll use the Marionette item view, so you don't even have to specify that. Then you have the item view where you define a template for it to use, and it's a standard jQuery selector pulling the template from the DOM, and it'll use that template to render the individual item. So there's just a couple of lines of code in order to use all of what I always use to render an individual item or a collection of items. That's one way to build a plugin. The other way, which is an approach that I try to take more often, is to not build on top of existing constructs from Backbone, but to build my own constructs that augment or use Backbone's object. So Backbone Memento, for example, it wants to use a Backbone model. When you say new backbone.memento, you pass a model instance into it. But that memento object can be used entirely outside of the model that you passed into it. You don't have to use memento inside of a model. You can use it in a view or in some other code and simply pass a model reference to it. Backbone model binding is kind of the same way. It wants to use a Backbone view, and it expects that your view has a model associated with it, but you don't have to use Backbone model binding within a view directly. You can call it outside of a view and simply pass a view into the constructor in order to use it. There's a lot of other pieces inside of Backbone Marionette as well that don't need any specific Backbone piece directly. The Marionette Region Manager, for example, which is what I use to move a view instance into the actual DOM to take what Backbone's view has rendered for me and display it on the screen, that technically doesn't require a view. It only requires a few simple attributes and methods to be implemented on an object. So I could pass any object I want into that region manager, and as long as I have a render method that doesn't take any parameters and a .el attribute that returns a string of HTML, it really doesn't matter what the object is. It doesn't have to be a Backbone view. So yeah, there's a lot of flexibility and a lot of capabilities in building Backbone plugins. It's really not the same as building a jQuery plugin, quite honestly. There's nothing like, you know, backbone.fn.whatever in order to create a prototypal function on the Backbone object. You quite literally say backbone.myplugin equals whatever I want my code to be.
So then with that, if, as you're saying, you're kind of, you know, you've got composites and things working together, and how do you go, do you get into some difficult things with debugging where you're trying to understand what's not talking to whom or if something's loaded in the wrong order, that kind of thing?
Oh yeah, definitely. Debugging is one of the trickier aspects of all of this, especially when you start breaking your applications out into multiple files. And I've run into this numerous times where I'll have 5 or 6 different files for my application in order to keep things organized. And in development mode, you know, I manually put all of these files into my HTML and I'll get them out of order and things won't work right. And I'll be pulling my hair out trying to figure out, you know, what do you mean this object is undefined? It's right there in my, files are out of order. So yeah, there's a lot of potential problems like that. The good side of that, though, the positive side of that is it's just JavaScript and it's going to be view sourceable in your browser. So as long as you're not uglifying it or minifying it in development mode, you're going to be able to trace through it fairly easily. And if the plugin developer or you know, additional layer developer has done a good job of organizing the code, then it should be pretty easy to see what's going on and where things are going wrong to a certain extent. Where it gets really difficult, though, is when you start using a lot of events throughout your application, especially if you're using something like an event aggregator pattern where you have a application level event object that you publish and subscribe events through, and it's not tied directly to any specific object in your application. Use it to broadcast application level events to all areas of your application. You know, at that point, it can get kind of tricky to remember what's talking to who, when, and where. And it's really important at that point to document things well, to know what events you're firing when and where and what purpose those events serve, but also to write good unit tests for your JavaScript. You might not say, hey, I'm going to write a unit test that covers firing this event from here, listening to it there, and seeing what the effect is. But you can split that in half and say, on this back end, you know, when the user clicks a button, this event aggregator event is going to fire. And then a completely separate test might go somewhere else to another object and say, when this event is found or is triggered, then this other object is going to react in this way and do whatever it does. So you split your events, your unit tests up along those event lines, and you write good unit tests around the behavior that you expect when things are triggered and when to trigger things, and that debugging problem tends to resolve itself pretty quickly.
So since we're on the topic of testing, what tools and approaches do you use for testing Backbone-based apps? I know when I first got started with this, I didn't find a lot of good information out there about the best way to do that sort of thing.
Yeah, the good information is becoming more and more available as people are doing more and more of it. As far as the tools go, Backbone itself is written test first with QUnit. I'm not a fan of QUnit, quite honestly. I think the syntax for it is ugly and painful. I mean, I've done enough of it. I've submitted a patch to Backbone directly, and so I can deal with it, but I don't like writing it. My preference is Jasmine, and Jasmine seems to be the de facto standard for people writing unit tests for Backbone these days. It just has a nice flow, a nice syntax to it that's easy to understand if you've done any work with RSpec, for example, or SpecUnit or any of the other BDD-style context specification testing frameworks in any other language, then Jasmine will be a familiar environment where you describe a context, you have a before each block and an after each block, and then you have it blocks for the actual tests, and you set expectations inside of those tests. So it's a pretty common thing to see Jasmine used these days. When you start getting into testing the Backbone views and the routers especially, it gets a little bit more tricky. You're going to need more than just Jasmine. One of the more popular frameworks to test backbone views is the Jasmine jQuery plugin, which gives you a lot of really nice expectations for Jasmine that assume you have jQuery up and running inside of Backbone and assume you're dealing with jQuery objects. So you can test for the inclusion of certain HTML or text inside of DOM elements. And you can test for CSS classes and whether or not an element is visible or hidden and do all these nice little things, which you could do on your own perfectly fine, but the Jasmine jQuery plugin makes it a lot easier. It also introduces the idea of fixtures for your tests. Now, a fixture in other testing worlds is where you set up a lot of data to be dealt with. In the Jasmine world with Jasmine jQuery, a fixture is where you set up some boilerplate HTML that you need, whether it's a template definition or an HTML element that a view expects to exist so it can attach itself to that, or whatever it is. The Jasmine jQuery plugin will give you the ability to add HTML fixtures to your tests. There's another popular framework called Sinon, S-I-N-O-N-J-S, which provides a lot of the same capabilities of fixtures and additional mocking and stubbing capabilities outside of what Jasmine already has built into it. And Sinon is becoming really popular to use with Backbone as well. So there are some great tools out there for testing Backbone for sure, and that information is certainly coming along more and more every day. But in general, I kind of agree with you. There's not a lot of great information on how to do that right now.
So with the general approach for, you know, say you're testing a Backbone view, are you handing it a model and saying render yourself and then using these Jasmine jQuery matchers to, you know, verify that the right HTML is emitted, or are you sort of testing at a different level than that?
That's actually one of the very common things that I do. I'll do exactly that. I'll set a model into a known state, hand it to the view, say render this, and then verify the HTML that it outputs. My preferred way of testing that is to ignore the DOM entirely. I will use a view in complete isolation, which meaning I won't attach it to the DOM at all. It will never approach the DOM. All it will do is render a string that happens to contain HTML. And the convention for that is for the view's .el attribute to contain that string. And so I'll have the view render itself into its own .el attribute, and I'll write all of my tests against that .el. That way I never have to worry about fixtures and actual DOM manipulation at the time that the test is running. It's just a string that's being manipulated. There's a lot of other tests you can do, though. You can have a view respond to a button click or an input from a user, and then have the view modify the model in the way that you would expect. So the type of testing that we're really talking about here is more of a state-based testing, where you're not testing the view implementation directly, you're testing the effect of telling the view to do something. You hand the view a model and you test against the thing, the HTML that the view rendered. You hand the view the HTML and you click the button in that HTML, and then you test the data on the model to make sure that the model's data is set correctly. So it's an indirect form of state-based testing to get the inputs and outputs the way you need it to be. There's also the whole behavioral testing aspect where you test interactions with other objects, which is another thing that I do probably a third of the time, where I have a call to an object from a view, but I don't want the actual call to go through. So I'll use a spy, which is essentially Jasmine's version of a mock or a stub, and I'll spy on a call to that other object and then verify that the call to the other object was actually made.
So we talked a little bit about best practices, I guess, and what resources are out there for best practices. If you had to throw out a couple big ones that you'd want to make sure people are aware of, what do you think are kind of the biggest key best practices?
That's a good question. I'm not really sure I can answer specifically about best practices other than to say, go look at the examples that are out there. The Boku's boilerplate, my own BB clone mail, but then take a look at the list of examples in the Backbone JS documentation. Not all of them have the source available, but some of them do. And you're going to find some really good practices in all of them that I think a lot of us, if not all of us, would agree that the term best practices is kind of a misnomer. It's only a best practice within a given context. And considering the flexibility and capabilities of Backbone, calling something a best practice is kind of a naive thing to say.
Yeah, it was one interesting thing that happened a few months ago was when Rob Connery took the Backbone sample code that comes Backbone and
right,
you know, redid it in his own way,
right?
And which I learned a lot from that it. Actually.
Yeah, he followed right along with exactly how I would have done it. I thought he did a great job.
That was one thing I found as I was going through is, you know, when to make a separate view versus doing a bunch of rendering in one view. That was a little bit of a, you know, tricky learning curve there.
Yeah, and I had a blog post about that a while back. The title of it is something different. It's how to get the model of the clicked element or something to that effect. But it was based on a common question that I see around that. And the answer was a lot of detail about exactly what you just mentioned. Whether or not to use a single view to render everything or splitting it out into multiple views. And in the end, it comes down to which is more appropriate for your scenario in your application. It's not that either of those options is the right way to do it. It's that you need to understand the ramifications of these options and how that applies to your specific scenario in your application. So yeah, there's not a lot of best practices that I can point to, but I think there's a lot of tremendous information out there on great ideas and good practices within specific contexts to solve specific problems. Basically, patterns, a set of backbone patterns out there. Rather than list off a bunch of different resources, which I would probably get wrong off the top of my head, I've compiled a list of my own favorite resources, everything that I found all around the web, including my own stuff, of course, at backbonetraining.net/resources. So pretty much anytime anybody asks me where to go to look for whatever, I point them to that resources page and I suggest a specific link or a specific section of that page in order to get what they're looking for. I've got a list of blogs, a list of documentation and user groups, a list of example code, books that are either directly about Backbone, related to Backbone, or what I consider some of the best JavaScript books around that you really need to read anyways. A lot of different screencasts and some other resources in there as well.
Okay, so now we move on to the second half of our show, which is entirely questions from Elijah Manor.
Hi, Elijah.
Formerly known as questions from Twitter, but Elijah seems to be filling up our tweet stream here.
I need to make some new theme music.
So one of his questions is, in what type of applications would you not recommend using Backbone, if any?
The smallest of the simple jQuery things. If you just need to set a few styles or do a simple fade in, fade out animation, you're going to waste a lot of code and time bringing in Backbone. If you have larger applications and you need to organize your jQuery code better, yeah, okay, start bringing it in. If you're not using jQuery or Zepto.js, you're probably going to have some heartache trying to get Backbone in place. If you're using MooTools or Prototype or, you know, Scriptaculous or some of those other libraries out there, some people have done some work to make Backbone work with those tools, but it's a bunch of patches that you're going to have to bring in yourself, and it's probably going to be easier to find some libraries similar to Backbone that work with your DOM manipulation framework of choice.
Okay, another of his questions. Do you plan to consolidate many of your blog posts into a Backbone.js book?
That thought has crossed my mind more times than I can count. And it's been suggested that I do it, and it's something that I definitely want to do. The question is finding the time to really dedicate my writing to that. It's a very selfish thing here, But one of the reasons I haven't committed to that is because I like to write crap and publish it as fast as possible. I publish things that are junk on a regular basis, and then I go back and reread it, and I edit it, and I reread it, and I edit it, all kind of live out there for the world to see. And I'll stop editing a blog post after a day or so. But within that first day, you know, 8 hours, 24 hours, whatever it is, I'll edit a blog post multiple times in order to make it right. And I like having that publish it for the world to see and revise it and then move on to the next thing kind of cycle. Writing a book is an entirely new world of editing where things have to start out, you know, necessarily quick and dirty, but have to become polished and edited and revised and revised and revised and revised over time. And I've written a handful of articles for various magazines, and I've done a little bit of that editing process. But the editors that I've worked with in those magazines tend to be, you know, grammar sticklers and punctuation sticklers, where they don't really touch the content. They assume you're the expert because you're the author. Whereas book publishers, especially the one that I would work with, they are really sticklers about content and about technical accuracy. And then you have the reviewers who are going to be even more sticklers about that and are going to tear you apart. And you're going to have to revise and revise and revise and rewrite and scrap and rewrite and revise again in order to get something done. And that's a tremendous amount of work. I'm not sure I'm ready to undertake that right now. So, yeah, long answer, but maybe.
How about mobile scenarios? Have you worked with Backbone in mobile scenarios? You know how it does there?
I have not, but it shines. If you're using LinkedIn and you have LinkedIn's mobile app, you're using Backbone. There's a handful of other mobile apps out there that are also using Backbone with wild success. It's becoming more and more popular in the mobile world. The ZeptoJS framework, which is one of your options for DOM manipulation, either jQuery or Zepto, it tends to be more focused and better targeted at mobile browsers. So you typically see Backbone in combination with Zepto when doing mobile development, although a lot of people are using jQuery in mobile development these days as well. I don't have any experience in that realm, though, so I really couldn't speak much about that.
Okay, one more question. Do you use RequireJS alongside Backbone?
I don't personally, although it's probably going to be in my near future. RequireJS is an AMD asynchronous module definition tool or framework for JavaScript. It allows you to organize your code into separate modules, and it solves the, oh crap, my files were loaded in the wrong order problem for you. So there's a lot of great benefit for doing that. Backbone itself does not support asynchronous module definitions out of the box right now. There's an open ticket in the Backbone GitHub issue list with a pull request to fix that. And I've heard, and I think I saw in the ticket, that it's going to be pulled into the next release, but I don't know when that release is going to happen. So if you want to use Backbone with RequireJS or any other AMD system, you're going to have to pull that patch into Backbone yourself. Oddly enough, one of my plugins, the model binding plugin, was recently patched in order to support AMDs so it could work with that. I do organize my Backbone code into modules, though, and I highly recommend that you do that if you're building a JavaScript application of any significance, any size at all, other than the most simple little demo applications and how does this work kind of scenarios. You really do need to organize your files into something structured and easy to understand so you don't have thousands of lines in a single file. And modules are a great way to do that. And asynchronous modules make that even more appealing. And RequireJS is the de facto standard for dealing with asynchronous modules in JavaScript code.
That's funny because just today I saw a quote, Jeremy tweeted something about removing, his tweet said, about to remove AMD support from underscore and Backbone.
Really?
Yeah. If you want to yell at me, you can find me.
Wow, I didn't see that.
So I don't know what the backstory is there.
I'll have to dig into that a little more. I mean, I'm not using it right now, so it doesn't really affect me that much. But there's, I think even the guys at Boku are doing Require.js, and I know a lot of other blog posts talk about how to set up a Backbone app with Require.js. So that's interesting to hear.
So one of the things that I initially found appealing about Backbone was that it seemed like one of the only framework like this, you know, MVC framework, if you want to call it that, that lets you render the HTML on the server and then attach all the client-side behaviors, you know, on the client. Mm-hmm. Whereas a lot of these frameworks like want you to do all the rendering on the client side all the time. And so for, you know, scenarios where you want to emit, you know, content that can be Googled, for example, that the right. Google crawler can index, you know, that's an appealing option.
Right. So there's a number of different pieces to what you're saying. I really can't speak to any of the other frameworks because I haven't done any research into any of that. But the basic ideas that you're describing are generalized into search engine optimization and accessibility. And the truth is, most search engines don't require flat HTML anymore these days. They're getting better and better and better about dealing with client-side rendered through JavaScript. They're not perfect by any means, and the better SEO optimization techniques are still to serve flat HTML. Screen readers and other assistive technologies are kind of in the same boat. It's not a requirement that you don't do client-side rendering, but you're going to have a little bit more to deal with in terms of making your site accessible if you're doing a lot of JavaScript-heavy applications. The way that Backbone helps you work around this is by taking advantage of modern browser techniques called push state. And push state is a part of the HTML5 APIs that were set up and standardized recently. And what push state does is allows JavaScript to directly manipulate the full URL of the browser. I'm sorry, not the full URL, but all of the URL after the server and port number. So any of the paths and extensions after the URL and port number in your browser's URL can be manipulated through JavaScript now, instead of just the hash fragment at the end of the URL. And this manipulation can be done without making a full request back to the server and doing a complete page request. So that's part of how Backbone facilitates search engine optimization and accessibility. And by using push state and by saying, hey, my application is going to manipulate normal paths. So instead of saying in Gmail, having the hash inbox slash whatever ID, you would have, you know, gmail.com/inbox/ID. And that is going to do a number of different things. It's going to tell your browser this is a regular URL. And it's going to allow your browser to bookmark that standard URL without a document fragment at the end. And when your browser hits that bookmark that you created, or you hit the refresh button, it is going to make a request to the server to get that specific URL and path from the server. So now your application can't just serve HTML that renders a bunch of, and JavaScript that renders a bunch of stuff on the client side. It has to be able to respond to that full path request from the server side. So you have to be able to render up all of the necessary data, the HTML and JavaScript and CSS and everything else on the server side in order to get that request back to the browser in order to show the browser everything that it requested. Otherwise, you've got a bunch of broken links that don't do anything and your application is essentially useless in terms of bookmarks. And search engine optimization and everything else is going to have all kinds of problems. So there's that aspect of search engine optimization and accessibility. And I've done a couple of blog posts on that as well. And there's a lot of really good information out there on using push state with Backbone. But to more directly address what you mentioned, rendering server-side and then attaching Backbone once it's on the client, yeah, that's definitely something that Backbone allows you to do, but it's not really Backbone that facilitates that. It's Backbone's use of jQuery that facilitates it. Backbone is simply flexible enough that you can either have Backbone generate the HTML for you, or simply tell Backbone to use an existing jQuery selected HTML element as the view.el that the view is going to be manipulating. So if I'm rendering something client-side, I stand up a view instance and I have the view render all of its content into the views.el attribute. If I'm serving HTML from the server side, I render the HTML and I send it down to the browser, and then the backbone code needs to be told, look, this HTML already exists. Use a jQuery selector and just go grab it from the HTML and use it without re-rendering all of it. And so it's not really Backbone that does that. It's jQuery that does that. And Backbone simply allows you to provide an existing EL to the view instead of rendering an EL at runtime. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. So I think I'm coming to the end of my questions. Do you guys have anything else you want to be sure we hit?
I'm out. There's a lot. I'm going to learn a lot editing. I've got a lot to.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is great.
Okay, so now we come to the Pimp Your Stuff section of our show.
Awesome.
And you have got some stuff to pimp, I'm assuming.
I do. So I mentioned the backbonetraining.net/resources earlier in this show. And if you hit backbonetraining.net, that is basically a giant advertisement for my services as a trainer and facilitator of Backbone. I can come into your company and help you get things up and running, train your people, get everybody at least to the point where they are competent with Backbone so that they can start building their application. Or if you've already got a team that is competent, I can help you really set in some of what I consider the best practices and better options for building larger Backbone applications across more than a single page throughout an entire system and really help you get things up and running. In addition to that, learning Backbone is great, and I highly recommend doing it if you're building serious JavaScript applications. But at a very, very fundamental level, you really need to know JavaScript. And Backbone is a great way to lead into that. But until you really understand the fundamentals of JavaScript, the way JavaScript object literals work, the way variable scoping works, the way context, the this keyword in JavaScript works, until you've got all of those rules down, you're going to kind of bang your head into a lot of different problems. Of course, you know, saying that, I have the answer. Yay! my watchmecode.net website, I've got a couple of screencasts up there right now, and I'm almost done recording another episode where I go into a lot of the fundamentals of JavaScript. The current episodes that I have up there include JavaScript variable scope, where I talk about function scope and global scope and show a vast array of different ways that you can manipulate function scope and global scope in order to do some really cool stuff to create privacy in JavaScript where you might not think you have privacy, and to create closures and create objects that have private variables and shared private variables and all kinds of cool stuff. There's another screencast up there on refactoring JavaScript. It's a live refactoring. I sat down and over an 80-minute period, I took one of my existing plugins, actually the Backbone Memento plugin, and I refactored it from a large monolithic structure into a well-factored handful of objects that were, you know, a single responsibility principle and all that kind of stuff taken into account. There's a third episode, which is free, which is an introduction to Jasmine, specifically the Jasmine standalone test runner. And then the fourth episode that I'm working on right now is JavaScript context, dealing with the this keyword and all of its intricacies and the strange ways that this is manipulated in JavaScript, which is not intuitive at all. If you're coming from a language like C#, the this keyword in C# behaves very differently than it does in JavaScript. In addition to that, I've got a screencast series on Backbone itself that I'm producing for Pragmatic Press. I've got 2.5 episodes recorded at this point, and I'm working on some of the final recording bits for that over the next couple of weeks, and hope to have that up sometime, maybe end of January, sometime in February seems a little more likely, though. So there's a lot of stuff I'm doing these days, a lot going on. I am available for consulting work if you need to get up and running with Backbone, or you need some general work to be done. So look me up online. I've got 1,000 different ways I can be contacted. And that's about it for my pimping.
All right. Well, I think that'll do it for us tonight. Thanks a lot, Derek, for coming on and educating us. And join us again next time for another episode of Herding Code.
All right. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Hi, this is John with three quick announcements. First is, we caught up with Derek after the show, and he agreed to give away a free screencast to the first person to answer a trivia question about the show. So watch the Herding Code Twitter account for that question. Second is, we'd like to thank Robin.net and Ross Furman, who have been helping us out by typing up show notes lately. So thanks a bunch to them. Third is, if you'd like to donate to or sponsor the Herding Code podcast, there's information on the website over in the sidebar. So take a look at that. Thanks a bunch.